At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to take your finance and investment questions and share their unbiased answers. This is InvestTalk, independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor, Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Thursday, September 29th, 2022 edition, and we are almost through the fourth quarter and only one more trading day left until we are in the home stretch. And my job here is to help you unpack the data that you're seeing on your screens, the narratives that you're probably reading, and how to apply all this to your portfolio, your strategy, and make sure that you are swimming not against the stream, but with the stream, right? With the current, okay? And that will ultimately make the odds of you succeeding much higher. And the way that we do that is by helping you avoid pitfalls and getting you up to date to where the best opportunities likely are in the market. Now, the way that I do that is by going over different talking points and headlines that I think are important for you to understand, but also by answering your finance and investment questions. And you can submit yours anytime at 888-99-CHART. You can leave your message 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, or you can call during our live stream program. Talk to me straight up, one-on-one, and we can address your question here. Either way, does not matter. Same number is 888-99-CHART. Now, I've got a packed podcast for you today, and my main focus point is in regards to home prices, falling home prices, and will it collapse the financial system? Like a lot of people are prognosticating. Well, we're going to discuss that. Discuss the shifts that we're seeing and what larger impact that could have. Also, I want to touch on what's happening in the UK. You're getting a bit of a relief rally, but what's really happening over there? And how is that impacting our markets? And then earnings revisions for the third quarter and into the fourth quarter. How are they looking? Positive, negative? Give you an update there. And then lastly, if we have time, I want to touch on market sentiment. That's always an interesting data point to consider when you're looking at least short to medium term in the market, because oftentimes most people, they get off sides at the wrong time. So we're going to look at that as well. Now, I have some voice bank input ready for you today. And on deck is a question about UGI as well as Atmos Energy Corporation. So I got this all planned for this episode of Invest Talk. And of course, your live calls. That's what's most important. 888-99-CHART is how you get through and ask your question today. Now let's take a look at the market. We had the S&P down about 2%. There we go. Sometimes you press a button and things disappear on you, but I got it back. Okay, S&P down 78 points, and we erased most of the gains from yesterday. But what was interesting is we closed well off the lows, and if you look at the two main markers, what I'm watching right now are the dollar, and the dollar had another weak day. So you had follow through on the dollar to the downside, which is good for the market. And with the market sold off, you also had follow through on the 10-year. Actually, you did not have follow through. That was up 4 basis points, but didn't recoup the losses from yesterday. On Tuesday, the 10-year closed at 3.96. We still remain well off that 3.75% at the close today. So still about a 25 basis point slide from where we were earlier in the week. And if you look at the Fed funds future data, what's interesting here is we are getting very close to that 50-50 odds of a 75 versus a 50 basis point hike in November. And this is probably the number one thing I'm watching. You can actually find this on the CME website, just the Google CME Fed Watch tool, and it'll show you all the different Fed meetings going forward until December of next year. And what are the odds that the market is pricing in for different rate policy? And this is what I talk about when the market is pricing something in. These are futures prices, and you can tell what the market is thinking. And last week, it was a 71% chance of a 75 basis points hike. Now it's down to 53%. So you got a 53-47. You call it a toss-up, basically, at this point, which is a very different kind of stance than the market was looking at post-Fed meeting. Basically saying, hey, this move in markets is breaking things, like what's happening over in Japan, the Bank of Japan, what's happening in England with pension funds and the BOE and the pound, et cetera. All of that is where the issues lie right now. Like I said yesterday, kick the debt all the way up to the sovereign level at almost across the developed world. That's the way governments have reacted over the past, call it 15 years post-financial crisis. And that's where the risk lies. So that's what I'm watching is, will the Fed recognize that it's not the corporate bond market that's going to break, but it's the currency market, the sovereign debt market that is creating bigger issues right now, bigger systemic issues. And, you know, they don't want to cut off their nose despite their face. They don't want to destroy the financial system. And that likely means a pivot here coming up. Now let's pivot over to our first listener question right now at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve or Justin. I was looking to see if you could give your comments on Visa. It's come down quite a bit from its highs, and whether you think that it's something that would fit in a portfolio at the right price, and if so, what that price would be. I'll listen on the podcast, and thanks as always.
All right. Looking at Visa, and this is well off its highs, down about 24% off its 52-week high, but its high back in July of last year was around $250 per share. Now we're at $180, so about $70 off of that. Let's call it almost 30% off its high from middle of last year. And this is all in the face of growing earnings. And earnings are supposed to be up 25% this year, another 13% next year. What I see, though, happening is multiple contraction. That's any of the high multiple names are getting that. And you've seen that over the past year plus as interest rates have gone up. And this is when it really, really pivoted. It was August of last year, kind of in a double top then. But my biggest worry about this name is the competition from the likes of Venmo and Apple Pay and think of crypto. I think longer term, Visa and MasterCard are not going to be the dominant players in the payment space. You just look at that in other countries. You know, here in the US, we are most addicted to the credit card and the transaction network of Visa and MasterCard. And I just don't see that sustaining itself long-term. So I think the premium that it still trades at, despite the downturn, despite rising earnings, is not enough for me yet. So I'm passing on Visa and MasterCard. I just don't love those long-term headwinds. For years, it was all about the tailwinds of moving to a cashless society and almost everything being charged to Visa or to your credit card. That's not really happening anymore. That growth is slowed to a trickle, and I actually think it's trickling the other way. And so I'm passing on Visa. Now we're heading into a break and I welcome your finance investment questions now. No question is too complex or too simple. You set the agenda during this hour and that's why we love your calls at 888-99-CHART.
Why do listener questions make InvestTalk better?
Which of these would you recommend?
Because each caller presents fresh questions in their voice.
I was curious if you still think aluminum has a ways to go from here.
When do I know the right time to take profits?
Should I be looking for an exit? Should I be holding here?
And listeners instinctively realize that InvestTalk uniquely offers a welcome dose of investing satisfaction.
I think you have a terrific show, and I've learned a whole lot.
Hey, guys, love your show. I've been listening for several years now, and I've learned a lot.
Justin Klein and Steve Peasley understand what investors need and want.
I would look at it from a tax perspective. If there's no tax implications, move on, find better ways to use that money.
I'm going with the odds. I think a half position now would at least get you in it and get you watching it so you won't lose track of it.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART. InvestTalk is here to help. And when you download the free InvestTalk podcasts, don't forget to rate and review. The phone lines are open, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. This is Chris from Atlanta. I wanted to get your opinion on Gaming and Leisure Properties Incorporated, GLPI. I was looking to get into a real estate investment trust. This one kind of passed my screen. I wanted to see what you thought about this to fill in a position on for real estate in my portfolio. Look forward to hearing your answer. Thanks for everything you do.
All right, this is Gaming and Leisure Properties, and it's a REIT engaged in owning, acquiring, developing, and managing and leasing gaming and related facilities. It has come down about 17% off its 52-week high, but the REIT sector has been hit because it's an alternative to the bond space, and you're starting to see those names correct and get to a level of yield that is at least on par with what you're seeing in the corporate bond yield space. And this is now yielding about 6.5%, kind of around that corporate bond level. And it looks like it probably has a little more downside, but you know, low 40s, which is in now high 30s. I think that was that's a good area to start picking it up because I think this is a quality REIT. Now, it certainly is going to be a bit cyclical, but its main tenant is Penn Gaming, and they're one of the better operators out there, especially when it comes to regional gaming networks. And, you know, I kind of like this overall. I think gaming, leisure, travel, that's all for leisure, not for business, but for leisure, continues to remain relatively strong. And this is a name I would pick up. I'd be probably patient, though. I'd probably wait until the high 30s for me to get excited about this name. Now it's at 43, but you're starting to get into the realm of where it makes sense. So I'm going to give GLPI a thumbs up, but I would be patient. Now, people take the time to leave an InvestTalk review on iTunes. I'd like to thank them for the courtesy by getting to their questions quickly. Doug in Missouri says, I really appreciate your knowledge and insight. What are your thoughts on PDI? PDI. And this is, looks like a closed-end fund, PIMCO Dynamic Income. And it does have a very high yield, 13%. But remember, this is leveraged. All of these, anytime you're buying a bond, a closed-end bond fund that's paying high dividend yield or payout of 9, 10, 12, this one 13%, know that you're going to get a lot of volatility either way. This isn't your typical exposure to the bond market. It's levered. And that's why this name has gone down so dramatically from the high of the pandemic around 33. Now it's at 19. So you've nearly been cut in half since the pandemic, and you've only received maybe 30% of that in yield. So you're still down 20%. And a lot of that has to do with the leverage that you're taking on. And the portfolios consisted of corporates, 28%, government bonds, 18%, securitized, 27%, cash and equivalent, 17%, and others, 9%. So it's fairly well diversified, but you're mainly investing in junkier credits, it looks like. So overall, this is just a very high risk play. It's high risk. Anytime you're using leverage, anytime you're using non-super safe securities like corporate bonds, like securitized bonds, etc., you know, it's just not a name that I want to be invested in because of that leverage. I rather own individual bonds directly. Now, this is the Invest Talk Thursday. The market is interesting, and I've got your questions, and I'm ready at 888-99-CHART.
Each day, InvestTalk listeners submit their finance and investment questions via phone or email. Would you like your question to be put near the top of the list? Just take a minute or two to leave a review and rating for InvestTalk at iTunes. And be sure to include a brief question with your iTunes review comments. And of course, your calls are always welcome 24/7. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
So my main focus point today concerns the story behind this question. Could falling home prices collapse the financial system? And this is really pointing to an interview by, I believe it was Bloomberg, with John Paulson, who is a big hedge fund billionaire manager. And he shorted more than $25 billion of mortgage securities during the financial crisis and made a boatload of money on them. But there was a question really about the weakening housing market and how does he see parallels to 2008? And he says that he does see a lot of frothiness in the market. But he also says, quote, the banking system and housing market are much different today than in 06, 07. The underlying quality of the mortgages today is far superior. You don't even have any subprime mortgages in the market. And the FICO scores are very, very high. The average is like 760, and the subprime, they were averaging 580 to 620 with no down, end quote. So what he's basically saying is, first off, the quality of the credits are much, much higher. And so even if the underlying collateral goes down, the vast majority of those that are borrowing money, that have a mortgage, they're unlikely to default. They have a lot of equity, unlike before when they were putting zero down. They didn't have any equity. They had skin in the game. So if they defaulted, no big deal. The vast majority have that. And then on top of that, there's not a lot of liar loans. There's more making sure people have the income that they say they do. And so you're really not going to get that wave of foreclosures due to people not being able to afford their home, especially now that they've refinanced at 3%. If anything, it's the opposite. They're going to be stuck there. They're going to not want to go buy another home at 7% mortgage. Okay. And then on the other side, he says another factor is that back then banks were very highly levered. Major banks had about 3% capital. That means that if the equity in the value of the bonds on their balance sheet, the assets in their balance sheet fall 3%, their equity is wiped out very quickly. But today, it's very different. The average bank has 9% equity, and the systematically important ones, the larger ones, they have 11 to 12% equity on their balance sheet. So you're talking about 3 to 4 times as much equity as they did during the financial crisis. And so while housing is large and important, and you're likely to get a weak housing market for the next, let's call it 3 years, that's going to be a slow bleed. And there's not a lot of forced sellers. And even if you call it nearly as bad as 08, which it's very unlikely to be, it's not going to create this bankrupt situation for banks. It's not going to threaten them because of where regulation has gone. They've raised a lot of capital. They've retained a lot of capital. You know, the Fed didn't let them pay dividends for a long period of time. Only recently did they allow them to start paying a bit of dividends. And still, some of them, like Wells Fargo, they said, no, you don't have enough equity. So he says housing may be a little frothy, but housing prices may come down or plateau, but not to the extent that it happened in 08. And I pretty much agree with that. And, you know, it talks about how difficult it is to short particular parts of the market. It talks about crypto and how Bitcoin looked frothy at 20,000 and went to 65. Now we're back down to 20. And so it's always hard timing wise. But what you always have to worry about is any systemic issues. And we don't see that anytime soon. Now let's go to James in New York. Wants to talk about Philip Morris.
How are you doing tonight?
Good, good.
So I have some money in basically just in the bank earning no interest, and I thought I might select a company that pays a nice dividend that's reasonably safe and hopefully purchase it at a good value. Do you think Philip Morris might qualify at these levels?
I do. I do think it qualifies. Now, it's been hit recently because of higher rates as well as a strong dollar. Remember, for Philip Morris, their entire business is international. This is Philip Morris International. So almost all of their revenue comes in other currencies than the dollar. Now, they do hedge that some, but not completely. So they're still going to be hurt a bit by the very strong dollar. And that's why you see earnings expected to fall 8% this year. It's not because their business is declining much. They do have some issues with Ukraine and Russia, but it's, you know, low to mid single digits part of their business. But a lot of the decline in the profits has to do with foreign currency. So this recent pullback to me is a buying opportunity, because I do think the dollar isn't going to be able to stay this strong without breaking a lot of things and the Fed pivoting, etc. And so that's why I do think Philip Morris, one of the better names to buy in this environment with this opportunity now down in the mid 80s. Our value is north of $100 per share. So I'm going to give Philip Morris a thumbs up. Thanks for the call. Now, the next InvestTalk, we went to the story of the ESG backlash lurking inside the executive ranks at top corporations. That story tomorrow, but for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your call at 888-99-CHART. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. It's easy to create a free job post on LinkedIn Jobs. To spread the word that you are hiring, add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile. And with LinkedIn Jobs, simple tools like screening questions make it effortless to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. This is why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one for delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. Listen, you want to finish the year strong, and adding the right team member, the right hire, might help you do that. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk with faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/invest. That's linkedin.com/invest to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I want to add some utilities into my portfolio, and I'm looking at two gas utilities. The first one is UGI, And the second one is ATO. Let me know if either of them are worth adding to the portfolio. Thank you.
All right. Looking at UGI and ATO. UGI is out of Pennsylvania. It's holding company with interest in propane and butane distribution, as well as natural gas and electric distribution services as well. And ATO, hold that up here. ATO, they're out of Texas, and they're engaged in the distribution of natural gas to 3 million customers in 8 states, primarily in the South. You're talking about states like Colorado, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Virginia. But 2/3 of their business is in Texas. So this is mainly a Texas-based utility. And if I'm looking at the profitability metrics, return on equity on ATO is right around 9%, 10%. And whereas UGI, that is much higher, right around 25%. But historically, it's back around that 10% as well. And it's a bit more volatile, I think, when it comes to its business, because of that butane and propane business, which is, you know, more up and down. So earnings are expected to fall for UGI 4% this year. ATO expected to go up 8% this year, and those revisions are going higher. So, and I like the exposure to Texas. A lot of people are moving to Texas, tax-free states, obviously very close to a lot of energy markets and relatively cheap energy compared to many other states. Pretty good weather. I know it's hot in the summer, definitely humid, but the migration trends are pretty solid. So if I'm going one or the other, I'm going to go with Atmos. I like the consistency of their business. I like their geographical reach, mainly focused in Texas, but does have some other exposure as well in the South, which also people are moving to. So if I'm picking one or the other, ATO, Atmos Energy is my pick. Now let's focus, let's pivot over to what's happening in England, because it's being talked about a little bit, but let me unpack it for you. And what's happening is that, frankly, rates got too high. And this hurt pension funds, who had a lot of long-dated securities, and they were getting some pretty big losses on those securities. So what basically the Bank of England did was they instituted yield curve control. Now, they're not calling it yield curve control, but they are trying to quell. All right, they announced it's suspending its program to sell bonds, which is basically QT, what we're doing, QT. And they're going to buy long-dated bonds. And that was a big relief for the market, where three-year gilts, they call them gilts, call ours treasury bonds, for over there, they're gilts. And it touched a 20-year high at 5%, the three-year gilt. And after this announcement, it fell all the way to 3.94%. So big reprieve there. And this started on Wednesday, and they planned to reduce its balance sheet by, they had planned to sell its balance sheet, or to reduce its balance sheet by selling gilts, but they've suspended that till the end of next month. And I actually think they'll probably never get to it. I don't think they're going to sell. I think this is a pivot. So this is a pivot by the BOE. You saw the Bank of Japan pivot before, the week before. And the big question is, when will the Fed pivot? And so, you know, when you get markets and investors addicted to low rates, when you take them off those drugs, you have a conniption fit, right? Things break. Problems arise. And ultimately, when push comes to shove, governments have shown that they are ready to quell volatility. They don't want that backlash. Now, what's interesting is that the pound actually gained 1.4% on Wednesday. But that's probably short-lived, because usually to do these yield curve control measures, they need to create money. or in the world of fiat. And that's what they're using to typically buy these bonds to make sure that they don't go to levels that break the system. And they were breaking the UK pension system. And so I wanted to give you an update there because it's vitally important to understand the trends that are happening around the globe and how that will feed into our markets and our policy. And remember, you have London is a huge financial center. And even though England isn't the same, doesn't have the same heft and importance as it did, say, 100 years ago, it's still, you know, a top 10 economy in the world and certainly is vital to the global financial system. And that's why they stepped in, because they don't want things breaking over there. Now let's try to fit in another InvestTalk review question. Forestry Guy 1970 says, I would like to get your analysis and a good entry point for a 3% position in VF Corp. This company would be added to my dividend growth and income portfolio for 5+ year time horizon. Now VF Corp is now down 70% from its high at $100 per share in December of 19, so pre-pandemic. Never got back to those levels, but they get up into around the 90 level in early 2021. Now we're at $30 and change at the close today. Current yielding 6.5%, but they downgraded their expectation for earnings for the balance of the year. And the big question is, yeah, where is that ultimate bottom? Now, this is a day with such high volume that you could say it was capitulation, right? You had actually the last 2 days really were very, very high volume. Not quite as high as what we saw back on July 27th when it had a big down day, but you're starting to get to that point where it's just being dumped. Now, VF Corp historically is a very, very strong business, strong performer. They own Vans, they own Timberland, they own North Face, Supreme, Dickies. These are very consistent apparel brands and in a lot of ways dominate their niche. Think of North Face. I know North Face has a strong following and they do very, very well. So I like that you're looking at this because long term, their return on equity, return on invested capital has been consistently high. But in this, you know, economic backdrop, they certainly are struggling. So, you know, I don't mind picking it up here long term. I think it's a pretty good value. Now, you're also trying to catch falling knives. So could it go much lower? Absolutely. You go to a monthly chart. The next major, major support is right around, call it 2250. So, you know, that's still another 25% lower from where it is today. Now, does it ultimately get there? Not sure. Possibly. But understand that that is really the next major support level. But I like what you're looking at because if you look at its return on equity, right now it's at 29%. It's certainly going to fall. But it's been consistent over the last decade, right in the low 20s for return on equity. That's a business I would love to own. So this is on my radar for potential buy. I was just waiting for really that turn. And unfortunately, the economic backdrop makes it difficult to see that turn in the very, very short term. That's why I think potentially could just grind lower for a period of time until you get that ultimate capitulation. But I definitely think you're close. Down 70%. Earnings next year expect to be $3.37. That's a 9 PE. That's hard for me to ignore. Now, if this was a bad business, that a business that wasn't that consistent, I'd probably not be a big fan of it. But right now, enterprise value to EBITDA 10, historically, yeah, when it gets, it doesn't usually trade that low, usually 12, 13. So we're definitely in the ballpark. And I think you'll do well long term at these prices. Just know that it could go down a little bit more. Here comes another listener question that came in earlier to our Anytime listener line at 888-99-CHART.
Hi there, Justin and Steve. Hey, I just wanted to ask a question about like dollar cost averaging. So I got like 20 different stocks and I'm trying to figure out how to, you know, buy several different stocks with just a limited amount of like regular input. So I'm putting like $75 in every 2 weeks, and I'm just not sure how to equally divide that. Should I put in like $10 in each one, or just buy one share and wait 2 weeks and then buy another share or something else? So yeah, I just wanted to see what you thought about that. All right, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Well, most brokers now, you can buy fractions of a share. So you just put the dollar amount you want to buy for each one, and they'll calculate the fraction of a share. So that might be one way to do it. Another would be to, you know, what is down the most if you have a lot of conviction in the various names, you know, what looks the cheapest relative to others. You could look at it that way to try to keep balancing it. But probably the simplest way, once again, is buying those fractional shares and getting in consistently to each one. That's really what dollar cost averaging is not trying to pick which one, but being consistent each time. And that's really the best way to do it, is with that consistency. And when you have a small dollar amount, those fractional shares is probably the only way to go. Thanks for the call. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So I get through and ask your question on today's show. Now let's touch a bit on earnings revisions. And guess what? We're only, like I said at the top of the show, we only have one more trading day in the quarter, which means next up we have earnings season. And analysts, they, throughout the quarter, they typically update their earnings estimates for the current quarter, call them earnings revisions, and they're almost always downward on average in aggregate. Why? Because I've said this before, the further out an analyst will look, the typically more optimistic they are about that particular, those particular earnings estimates. But so far this quarter, about a third of S&P 500 industry groups have had positive earnings revisions. So the groups as a whole, meaning that more analysts have raised estimates than cut them for those particular industry groups. Now, that's not amazing, but it's better than what has played out in previous recessions, when typically zero industry groups have had positive earnings revisions. So while it might seem dire out there, and the economy is certainly weakening, what you're seeing from analysts that are talking to the executives on a consistent basis, that are doing channel checks, that are assessing the holes of the industry and each particular name within the industry, they're still seeing 3 of the 11 are getting some upgrades. So, you know, it's hard to see a market breakdown in that type of environment. Now, anything's possible, especially with the speed of where interest rates have gone. But I wanted to highlight that because it's vital to get an update of what to expect for earnings season coming up, because that's really what the market's going to eye next, is what that those earnings are going to be coming in, and then adjusting their estimates on price targets, upgrades, downgrades, etc. You already seen that recently, and I think it's of note. Okay, now to keep in mind that while the summer has ended, market volatility has not. You've seen that, and that means you need to pay attention, update your strategies. So it's worth taking a minute to making you aware of the free portfolio review assessments that we do for our listeners and clients via telephone or GoToMeeting. And this is where we unpack your current portfolio, your positions, put a risk number on it. You know, what type of risk are you taking versus what type of risk should you take based on your risk tolerance level? And how do they line up? Should you be taking more risk, less risk? Should you be investing more in large cap growth or large cap value? Usually what it is, large cap, mid cap value. Should you be more in corporate bonds versus treasuries? Things like that. So it's a full breakdown of where your portfolio is now and a recommendation of where you should be headed. And we do this all at our company, KAPP Financial, where we practice unbiased guidance, both on and off air. And we practice parallel investing, which means you invest right alongside our clients. So I encourage you to reach out to me via investtalk.com or our KAPP Financial office in Irvine, California, 800-557-5461. Steve and I would love to speak you speak with you just for a short period of time and help you get your portfolio optimized. Now, the phone lines are open and I'm ready for your calls. And we're heading into our final break. So whenever you're ready, pick up the phone, give us a call, 888-99-CHART. This is Invest Talk.
Got a question for Steve or Justin?
Hey guys, this is Joe from Lake Jackson, Texas, south of Houston. And I've got a question about warrant shares. I think that's the right term.
What's your question? 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to Invest Talk. We've seen the markets go up, then down, sideways, and around. It's called volatility. And if you're a serious investor, you'll have finance and investment questions for Justin Klein. He's here now taking your calls live. Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, I would like to get your opinion on Goodyear Tires. Ticker symbol is GT. Even with the transition to electric vehicles, they would all be using tires. So I would like to get your opinion on valuation and what a good entry price would be. Thank you.
It's correct that no matter what you're driving, it's probably going to need some rubber tires. And GT, Goodyear Tire and Rubber, is certainly one of the leaders within the space. Earnings expected to be down 3% this year, but back up 28% next year. But those estimates are coming down markedly. And what I'm actually watching is the free cash flow level. And they were crushing it during the pandemic, about $1.2 billion in free cash flow in the second quarter. As of the second quarter of 2021, now it's negative $507 million. So a very volatile business, and the that cash flow level just continues to ebb. And if you look at cash from operations, that peaked at about $1.86 billion. Now we're at $600 million. So a lot of people had money to buy new tires for their cars, buy new cars, and that has certainly slowed pretty dramatically and to a level, frankly, I don't feel comfortable with. And I don't love the technicals. So I'm going to give this overall, I'm going to pass on it. I just don't like the business trends, and I don't think of it in context to electric vehicles. It's really about how many miles are driven, and actually, if you think about it, because people are going to work from home more, maybe that's why, right? I don't need to invest in great tires. I'm not commuting nearly as much, not driving nearly as much, so that's why I'm going to give GT a no. I'm going to pass on it. I don't like those secular trends. Right? Now, lastly, let's touch a bit on sentiment. And a new reading was released today from the American Association of Individual Investors. And it and bearish sentiment, which is represented by an expectation that stocks will fall over the next 6 months, hit 60.8% in the latest reading. And that's a tad lower, not by much, from the previous mark, which is 60.9. So, tad more optimistic, but not really. And it marks the first consecutive reading above 60 in the survey's history, going back to 1987. So, individual investors are very, very pessimistic. And if you look at another sentiment indicator, which is the Investors Intelligence Bull Bear Ratio, that signifies extreme pessimism when it's below one. Well, it's currently at 0.74. Okay. And the last time that's lowest level since the financial crisis was in June. And that was right before the rally in stocks. Now, these are often short term, month, 2 months, 3 months. Call it a quarter or two. that it typically has good predictive reliability. Beyond that, you know, market can always roll over once sentiment gets offside the other way. And that's typically that ebb and flow of sentiment that markets always have. But then there's the broad, longer-term trends. So don't use this as an indicator to buy and hold for 2-3 years just because sentiment is bad, but it can be a reliable indicator for buying and holding for 2-3 months. And last time we got a bounce from mid-June into mid-August. It was basically a 2-month rally, and a lot of that was sentiment driven. And then you get volatility control funds, and you get different types of algorithmic trading funds that follow up on that trade, and you get that move higher. But ultimately, it's about the trends of liquidity, the trends of earnings and economic backdrop. All that is going to say whether those counter trend rallies are sticky or they'll be faded like the last one. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This is another Invest Talk program. Steve Peasley and I thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, now exceeding 45.6 million. Thanks to you. You can get yours anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play, and be sure to rate and review on iTunes. And if you leave a question with your review, we will prioritize your answer. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.